subliminal mind, f**k America. WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is the Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the phone number. 855-915-9636. Write those numbers down. Punch them into your smartphone. Call into the show. We love to hear from our listeners. Coming up later tonight, our Orange President speaks, and we're going to have the reaction to his speech last night, which was overwhelmingly positive. We're going to break down what he said, not all of which was overwhelmingly positive, but we'll get into it. He is our Orange President, and America loves him a little bit more today than they did yesterday. But before we get into the news and everything else that's going on, we probably should talk about the burning topic.
I don't want to hear it.
Who was it that won the Oscar pool?
Which team?
Which team? And we'll start with the individual honors. That would be me. Uh-huh. That would be me.
No,
I won.
just to remind you, last year I did win. 3 years ago I won. So I'm good at this, typically.
But every other year you win, is what you're saying. And every other year I win.
Yeah.
We're both.
Actually, it seems like it.
We're both good at this, actually.
But if anybody was listening last week and maybe wrote down what our picks were, may I issue a very sincere apology. I thought I had pretty much a lock on many of these categories. I was terribly wrong.
I apologize
and I am
for
sorry.
Nothing. I apologize for nothing. Look, I go by all the indicators. I go by all the data analysis, all that stuff.
And one of the biggest things, we saw most of the movie.
We did. And here's the thing. Kim actually got us the team win because she correctly picked Casey Affleck to win Best Actor.
And I think what I'm more upset about, we were at lunch that afternoon talking about it. Casey Affleck absolutely has a lock on it. And then, you know, stupid last minute changes.
But I
deleted that and went with Denzel Washington.
You and I and Molly all went with Denzel Washington in that category. We all got Best Picture wrong, all four of us, as did all of the experts.
Everybody.
Okay, everybody who told you that La La Land was going to win Best Picture was wrong. And by the way, I'm going to own that, because one of the things about all these Oscar prediction sites that are out there and all these pundits that come out and they're like, here's what's going to win. The day after the Oscars, they disappear. And they never come back and they're like, oh, we were wrong. And you know what? We were wrong. I am surprised that Moonlight won.
I should have went with my gut. So many times in these categories, I said, this deserves to win. I wanted to win, but it won't win. Well, it did win.
If
so either I'm horribly awful at this, or I am a psychic. I don't know.
If anything, there was the possibility that Barry Jenkins got Best Director, and La La Land still got Best Picture.
Yes.
And La La Land won a number of the technicals, as it was expected to do. But it looks now like the days of Best Director and Best Picture both going to the same film are over. It's been 5 years now that this has been happening.
It's like the Academy giving a nod to both and saying that, you know, you both created such excellence, but we can only give the major category of Best Picture to one.
And when you consider that a film that costs less than $2 million to make won Best Picture, that's huge. That's massive.
So
now that is David taking down Goliath.
So this year, once again, we did do your wife and I were on one team.
Yes.
Molly had 13. I came in at 12.
Yeah.
Kim and you were on a team. You had 16 and she had 15.
Correct. So our team clearly was the better. Now, Molly got you a couple of points. Because
she did.
Because Molly,
she used her life experiences.
Molly correctly picked Sing as best live action short, which I said it was a possibility. It was either that or Ennemi Intérieur, one of those two. Sing won that. I believe she chose Suicide Squad.
She did as well.
For best makeup. Mm-hmm. And
I
we laughed
believe
at her.
That, yes, you and I laughed and thought that was a joke.
Because we laughed at the idea of Oscar-winning film Suicide Squad, mm-hmm. which is now a part of the American lexicon forever. Suicide Squad is an Oscar-winning film. Yeah. That never should have happened.
Mm. For all those people that said it was such a bad movie.
So that was another one that she got right. One that went my way was The White Helmets.
It was true.
And that was...
I chose Joe's Violin for that one.
Yeah, and that was a tough call between those two movies, but I thought The White Helmets was the more substantial and better documentary of the two. Used to be that you always vote for the Holocaust film. Maybe we're not always voting for the Holocaust
film
anymore.
Now, when we're going over many of the categories, you make it very clear what the difference between sound editing and sound mixing is.
And we got,
unfortunately,
we all got those wrong.
I believe that everybody that voted, which that's their job to do,
yeah.
Don't know what that category is either.
I'm going to argue differently. And I'm going to tell you that this is the first year I can remember where the Academy probably got it right.
Really? And they didn't go with the normal, hey, it's a war movie, automatically we have to give them sound mixing.
Arrival certainly deserved, and a lot of people thought Arrival deserved the sound editing Oscar, mm-hmm. because you had to create an alien language. That was a crucial part of the film. And they won for that. When you look at the sound mixing of La La Land next to the sound mixing of Hacksaw Ridge, Hacksaw Ridge is much more complex. There is a lot more going on there. And we talked about that American Sniper example where the end of the film, Bradley Cooper's watching TV, mm-hmm. and you think he's watching a war movie, and then the camera pulls around and you realize the TV isn't even on. Mm-hmm. It's all in his head.
And how many moments in film depend so much on sound.
And that's what sound...
creating that scene for you.
That's what sound mixing and sound editing do. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at this and I'm like, yes, both of those films absolutely deserve to win. I'm surprised that the Academy finally got it right.
Hmm.
So.
Well, there's always next year.
There's always next year for you. For me, there is another championship to add to my lengthy, lengthy list of championships on this program.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is the year I finally win the Christmas music battle.
It's never going to happen.
That I came.
I hope.
I came so close last year.
Time Travel with Chris Earle is still listening to the show, and we'll call in and debate that.
Yeah, but in a year when everybody was down in the Oscar picks, coming up with 16 on my end and 15 for Kim, very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Very impressive. That was, by the way, enough to win. So, as we promise every year, we guarantee you will win your Oscar pool if you use our picks. It's just a question of which one of us you want to listen to this year.
Yeah. We actually went to a party at your house.
You want to listen to
so
me.
You won your own party gift that you made.
I know. It's actually...
we had a fun game of bingo going.
Yeah, actually, half of the gift is going to go to you because we already have it. So, yeah.
You're sweet.
So I got a copy of Arrival out of the whole thing.
Ooh,
which was
fantastic.
Yeah, I like that movie.
Great movie.
So let's move on from the Oscars, maybe, and find out what else is going on in this wacky, wacky world of ours.
Well, in local news, we learn there is no room at the Logan Airport Inn. The Boston Office of U.S. Customs and Border Protection has recently asked local police departments to make more bed space available for short-term detention of non-citizens awaiting removal from the country, a concern for advocacy groups who fear the agency is building up jail space to facilitate President Trump's immigration crackdown. The letter by Chief Officer Daniel B. Joyce of the Boston office says that detainees will be held while awaiting the next available flight to leave the United States or pending their transfer to a law enforcement branch of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, a separate agency. The customs agency would pay a flat rate to local departments willing to house detainees, according to the letter. Sean D. Smith, a spokesperson for the agency, in a statement that his office regularly needs temporarily housing individuals detained by the U.S. entry. Quote, due to a lack of overnight housing facilities at some ports and entries, such as Boston Logan, we rely on contracted support from local law enforcement jurisdictions to assist with the overnight housing, and we are currently looking for additional jurisdictions to partner with, he said in a statement. So now we have And this is something that we've been talking about for weeks, ever since President Trump brought forward, first of all, the travel ban, and now this new immigration policy coming through, and really immigration reform. It's interesting to know that there is only a small, limited amount of space at many of these ports, Logan being one. And what's also interesting is that the Boston office for this customs agencies deals with every single state in New England. So it's not like Maine has its own, New Hampshire has its own. Everything is working out of Boston. So if you are an illegal immigrant that is taken in, say, in Connecticut, then they're brought in into Boston. Thinking about how much pressure that is now going to put on that system, but then also now asking for help by these local jails, what are you going to start putting people in? This is where I scratch my head and say the implementation of it seems very, very difficult.
Well, they bring them here because we have a federal courthouse and the other New England states do not. Mm-hmm. So that's why that happens. Couldn't we just set up a tent like in the middle of that big loop driveway?
They do in the Middle East.
Put up some tents. Mm-hmm. There's a hotel in there. They got a lawn. Put a tent on the lawn, and then you get a place.
No, and I absolutely do believe in so many times I've had
a nice
stated
tent.
It.
I'm not talking about some cheap, like, you know, like the jungle over in Calais, mm-hmm. where you're like sleeping rough.
Yeah, like REI style. I mean,
one of those nice field tents they've got where like everything's
with the tarp,
sectioned off.
The sticks.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, get a nice tent out there.
Like I said, I've reiterated it so many times on the show, and I do believe in many of what President Trump is putting forward for immigration reform. And, you know, I can't just put up my hands and say, hey, let's, you know, just open our borders, provide unlimited welfare, and so on, and free housing for all the people that are here illegally. But I mean, if this is what you want, if this is what you believe in, and you are one of those people that say, you know, America should take everybody in. This has always been our policy. I want you just to imagine what our country will look like in another 4 years with this being continued.
Yeah. Well, that's...
And how much stress it is not only putting on the financial government, federal government, but it's putting on state by state. I have, and I've said it before on the show, I have friends who are teachers in many of the suburbs outside of Boston, that they have kids that are coming in that are illegal immigrants that are brought in and do not know English. So they are required, and, you know, administrators say, do what you can.
But there is a bigger issue at stake here, which is the willful disregard of the law that took place under the Obama administration and under the Bush administration.
Attempting to be continued throughout the Trump administration, when we have, the mayor of Chelsea over here, the mayor in Somerville, Mayor Marty Walsh, who has willingly opened the doors of City Hall just in case any of our friends and brothers get pushed out of the country.
Can we keep the people from Logan Airport and City Hall? I mean, Walsh wants them there anyway. Mm-hmm. Why don't we just use City Hall for this? Believe me.
When Marty's going to have a problem with what's happening?
Believe me when I say this is going to be a temporary problem. Because once the word gets out that you can't just walk into America anymore, people are going to stop.
No, of course.
Okay? And the smuggling is going to stop. And a lot of these things are going to stop. So what you need is a temporary solution of what you do with the people who are trying to get in before the word gets out that you can't. On the other side of that, we have got law enforcement, which is what we should have had all along. And as I've said before, all of these people who are bent out of shape about Trump's tearing families apart and Trump's deporting everybody and Trump hates immigrants, Trump is enforcing laws that were passed by the United States Congress that say there is a legal way to enter the United States and then there is illegal immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are criminals, whether they are legal immigrants or illegal immigrants, who simply don't belong here.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you came to this country legally, if you rape somebody, if you murder somebody, if you are dealing drugs, you don't get to stay.
How many times have we gone over situations that are happening between local and federal governments dealing with ICE, and both really don't know what to do. And I'm talking about not as of recent, I'm talking about in past administrations, specifically Obama's administration, when there was such disconnect between the federal government and ICE. ICE are the people that take in these illegal immigrants that are raping and killing. Because as much as you don't want to believe what Donald Trump is saying, that's actually fact. There are some people that are doing it. Is every single person coming over? Absolutely not.
No. Most of the people who come to this country, most
are
people who come
to
the United States,
are trying to make a better life for themselves. Absolutely.
Are trying to get away from the hell back home.
Of course.
And they're trying to give their kids a safe place to live. And fantastic. Mm-hmm. That's a noble ambition. Okay. There is a right way to do it, and there is a wrong way to do it.
And the right way and wrong way is the difference between legality.
Yes.
It's either legal or illegal. So when people just assume that Trump wants to just get rid of everybody, it's not the case. It is following federal law, just as you stated, something that was passed by Congress.
You can't sit there and say, we're going to enforce these laws and we're going to ignore these laws. That's not how it works.
But that's how it's been happening for so many years.
Correct.
And this is why we've gotten to the position that we are in now.
Correct. And this is why I say, if you are a Democrat and you want to be angry about this, or if you are pro-illegal immigrant and you want to be angry about this, don't be angry at Donald Trump. Be angry at the elected leaders who have ignored the law for two decades. Be angry at everyone who let everyone come in here without any consequences, because there was never any guarantee that things were going to stay that way forever.
Mm-hmm.
And the American people finally got to a point where they said, we've had enough of this. We want something done about this, and elected Donald Trump.
Of course, and that's being naive. If you thought back 10 years ago at the number of people that have come into this country, that it was going to stay the same, that there wouldn't be any stress on infrastructure, there wouldn't be stress on funding. We are in an extreme deficit. And is all of that from illegal immigrants coming in? No. But when you have so many people that are getting housing for free, getting extra aid from the government, this is not just talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're talking about billions of dollars.
There's two sides to that. But certainly one side of it is the unfettered immigration to this country has enabled business people of low moral character to exploit a vulnerable workforce. Mm-hmm. And they do exploit them because they're not being paid minimum wage.
And you want to talk about another people?
They're not withholding taxes.
More people to be angry at. Those are the other people that you should be angry at, because they, exactly like you just said, exploited the fact that we now have so many workers coming into this country that are willing to work for, say, $5, $6.
Sure. Because
you're wondering why.
Because
number one,
that's $5 or $6 more an hour than you're ever going to get at home. And number two, you don't get shot at on the way to and from work.
Yeah.
These are huge benefits if you're coming to this country. Okay. And people will live 20 to a house to make it work. The New York Times did. And by the way, this isn't about people from South America either. This isn't limited to that. There's all kinds of people from China in the United States who are being exploited, because that's part of the way their system works to get people into the United States. New York Times did a big expose on what was happening in the nail salons in New York City. And the reality is, unless you cook all your own meals, do all your own landscaping, do all your own laundry, never shop retail, unless you are completely removed from the daily American economy, you are exploiting workers. Because you are benefiting from the exploitation of people. This is a kind of slave class, mm-hmm, that exists in this country right now.
No, and I think the time that you...
I don't like to use the phrase slavery to describe it, because I think it diminishes what was going on in this country prior to the Emancipation Proclamation.
But one of the past conversations that we had on the show, and how you essentially laid out where the United States could go as a country if now we reduce the number of illegal immigrants, and people are saying, well, who are going to do all these jobs? That's the first question, and especially coming from the left,
either,
that is posed to you.
Either Americans are going to get off their fat asses and do them themselves, or people making a living, mm-hmm, wage are going to do them. And guess what? When and people there, find
but
out,
there are plenty of people here that are here illegally, that were born here in the United States, that are unemployed, and to come back and say, well, those jobs pay too cheap. Well, companies are now going to have to pay more.
Correct.
Yes, maybe in the small time, so you might see prices come up a little bit. But this is what we got for having so much in so many years of taking advantage of a system where all of these goods were so cheap. All of these services were so cheap.
And Donald,
because they're paying their labor cheap.
And Donald Trump laid all this out in his speech last night. And the logic behind it is irrefutable. The Democrats don't have an answer to this. And they know it. But here's the bigger question. Why are the Democrats advocating for continued disobeying of our laws? What kind of an elected official?
It's on perfect display here in Boston.
What kind of an elected official who is elected to uphold the laws of the city, state, country that he or she represents stands back and says, no, no, we're going to ignore the law?
How are you, Derek, as a taxpayer here in Massachusetts, giving money to the state
so
or
they
giving
can ignore
money
the law
to your city to have your mayor, who is voted in, blatantly ignoring federal law?
Exactly.
That make you feel good as a taxpayer?
No, it doesn't.
Does that make you feel good that the money that you've worked hard for goes to that?
That enrages me as a taxpayer. And I've made the argument many times before, and Brian Joyce used to make this argument and still does as well. Americans will pay taxes all day long if we see the benefits of it.
Mm-hmm.
When we're throwing tax money at politicians who just say, we're going to ignore the law and let the illegals run free, we don't want to give you our tax money, okay? You shouldn't be in office. You're a joke. You're a clown.
Mm-hmm.
The basic part of your job description is to uphold the law. And if you don't like the law,
crazy,
go write a new one. You're in Congress. All these people in Congress who are like, oh, we got to stop Trump, change the law. Write a law that says anybody can come into the United States of America at any time for any reason and stay here and make less than minimum wage, mm-hmm. and we're fine with it, and then see if the American people will support you in that. The American people will not, because there are limits to what we will put up with, and those limits were crossed a long time ago. So this is a new reality. We're actually going to enforce some laws in this country.
Hmm. Crazy.
Yeah. Whether or not we enforce the marijuana laws,
those are what they're there for.
That is another story that may play out in unpleasant ways in the near future. We'll find out. In national news, on a similar theme, Vice President Mike Pence said the Trump administration will release a new executive order limiting entrance to the United States from six nations, including Syria, Iran, Yemen, Libya, Sudan, and Somalia. Iraq is expected to be eliminated from the list under the new order in a nod to that country's partnership with the United States in the fight against ISIS. Legal permanent residents of the United States will not be affected by the new rules, and exemptions for minority religious groups are also expected to be removed, which will make the order more difficult to challenge in the courts. So one of the things that they went after when they took this to the courts was the original executive order basically said, if you are a Yazidi, or you are some other minority that everyone is trying, you know, religious minority, if you're a Shriner that everyone else is trying to kill, we'll let you in.
Mm-hmm.
We'll move you to the front of the list. If you are one of the people trying to kill everybody, we're moving you to the back of the list. And everybody runs off to the courts and says, this is religious discrimination. Actually, it's trying to protect some very vulnerable people. By taking that out, you eliminate the challenge. I think in practice, it's still going to work that way. You know, if we've got a choice between a Yazidi family and some Syrians with questionable passports who are all of fighting age, the Yazidis are probably going to be let into the country.
Now, one of the major things happening with this new reform is Iran is being removed from
Iraq is being removed from the list. I know. I get it wrong, too. Iran is still on the list for reasons I don't fully understand.
That's where I guess I meant to say Iraq. And I'm surprised when reading that Iran was not.
Yeah. You know what? It has a little bit to do with who is backing which insurgent group in Yemen and in Syria, and Iran tends to be on the wrong side of a lot of these things. It's partly a gimme to Saudi Arabia because the Saudis and the Iranians are continually battling for influence and control in the Middle East.
Yes.
It still doesn't make any sense.
But it's such an interesting dynamic when you're talking about the United States trying to have peace talks with Iran and having these deals that, what? We're going to now put you on a list?
There are more Iranians affected by this travel ban
than
any other nation. Because we actually have a lot of ties with Iran. There are a lot of Iranians in the United States. Because historically...
No, it's absolutely a large business hub.
Historically, we supported the Iranian elite. And so a lot of Iranians came over here. And we've had backdoor ways for Iranians to get into this country for a long time. And I understand you're trying to send a diplomatic message on one level. But on another level, Iran really isn't in the middle of all of this. Iran has a functional central government. Iran is not going to allow its people to come over here and commit acts of terrorism because they know that will end very, very badly for them. So personally, I think Iran should be struck from the list. Everybody else here, Syria, I don't have a problem with it. Yemen, I don't have a problem with it. Somalia, no problem with it. Sudan, does anybody know what's going on in Sudan? Libya, none of those five countries have functioning central governments.
You know, and for any of our listeners that hadn't listened to us first talking about when this came out and trying to grasp what the travel ban was about and how these countries were picked, so many people argue that, you know, these countries aren't even some of the most dangerous. These countries aren't even the most with Muslims or Islamic terrorists, which is true in some ways. But some of the countries that are listed here, and you made a perfect point in saying, and what a lot of people maybe don't know, is that many of these countries do not have a central government like Iran, like Iraq. So you can't call them up and say, hey, is Derek Gary a citizen? I mean, and the fact that we here in the United States, and it's pretty much not getting reported, found real passport-making machines, not fake passports. So I'm actually not talking about, you know, constructing fake passports. These are real passports that, you know, oops, we happened to leave a passport-making machine in one of the factories in
ISIS,
Syria.
ISIS can print legitimate Syrian passports all day long.
Yes, and that's been absolutely proven with some of the terrorists. Oh, if you're wondering who shot up the Bataclan and multiple other attacks in Belgium and France, oh, those were them, and they used real passports that were artificially made from these.
That is the real intelligence, information, and the real threat that is behind all of this. This isn't about punishing Muslim nations. This isn't about kicking out all the Muslims. This is about, we know there are fake passports out there. If you have a country with a functioning central government, you can request a copy because the government keeps a copy of those passport documents. And you can compare names and photos. And you can say, is this the person that you have on record? And they can say yes or no. If we're talking about Sudan or Yemen or Libya, either the records don't exist or there's no one there to get the records or nobody even knows what international relations are anymore because it's been so long since we've had a functioning government. So,
and that's a reality of what we're facing here now.
Yeah. And
so to understand, you know, I think so many people want to imagine that essentially this is a war and we are fighting the war against terrorism and against ISIS.
It is a
ISIS,
war.
And
they have declared war on us. It's a war.
We are in a war state. It's not the same as it was in World War I, World War II, Vietnam. Every single decade, warfare changes. And the battlefield now is in point A and point B.
No, the battlefield...
It is anywhere.
The battlefield is Copley Square. The battlefield is Times Square. The battlefield is the Washington Mall. The battlefield is the Mall of America. The battlefield is wherever these individuals can create chaos as quickly as possible, as many casualties as possible, with minimal risk.
And I mean, you cannot deny this. Again, talking about what happened in France, happened in Belgium. here on our own soil, in Orlando, in San Bernardino.
Somebody gets drunk and mows down Mardi Gras, and everybody starts thinking terrorism. Nope, just a guy rocking a 0.32 blood alcohol level.
Yeah. But, I don't know. More craziness with this travel ban.
Yeah.
It's how it's going to be rolled out.
Expect the announcement in a couple of days. I think this one is airtight enough that...
And it was mentioned, or partially mentioned, in last night's speech, which we will get into later in the show.
The usual suspects are going to make the same noise about it, but they're going to have a harder time fighting this. And again, it's a temporary measure. Although you would think that, you know, it's been, 3 weeks now since the old one got thrown out. Have they had any time to improve the vetting since then? Or are we just throwing up our hands and saying, we don't think we're ever going to be able to do it? That's not an answer here. In world news, French presidential candidate François Fillon has gone back on his word, all but guaranteeing a runoff between Marine Le Pen, the National Front, and Emmanuel Macron of En Marche. Fillon promised to remove himself from the election if he was formally charged in the Penelope Gate scandal, which accuses Fillon of paying his wife hundreds of thousands in taxpayer euros for government work she did not do. Fillon was summoned to appear before a judge on March 15th, where he is expected to be formally charged, but forcefully refused to drop out of the race, calling the investigation, quote, a political assassination, end quote. In other French campaign news, frontrunner Macron had an egg smashed on his head while he visited a farming exposition today. They don't like it.
Somebody, no, Macron, he's a...
Somebody smashed an egg on Macron. Macron is the centrist in all of this.
Of course, and he's the 38-year-old investment banker who at one point was an economic advisor to Hollande.
Yes, he's a former finance minister, actually.
And, you know, never been prime minister, but could be a battle. Obviously, many, many issues on the table with what's happening, especially in the state of France. You know, one of the overriding issues is unemployment. You're talking about it stands at about 10%, and it's the eighth highest among the 28 EU countries. And one in four at the age of 25 is unemployed.
Yeah.
So that's another one. We were just talking about terrorism. Huge. And this is where I think you see a very big difference on the candidates and where they stand. And involving not only terrorism, but immigration and who can come in and who cannot.
I'm surprised Le Pen isn't polling better than she is with everything that's gone on over there. And with the general sort of populism wave that is spread across the Western world. I would think, I mean, when you take Fillon out of it, it's absolutely between Macron and Le Pen at this point. But the general consensus is that Macron is going to win. And that doesn't seem to fit with everything else is going on. Now,
Le Pen is more serious on immigration and terrorism. Because essentially you have France, 320 people have died in France since January 2015. They're basically in a state of emergency. And it is known that you have hundreds of Muslims that are coming in or that have fake passports.
The problem really lies with the history of her National Front Party, which, you know, started by her father. It is a very right-wing party.
And they've devoted themselves to, you know, giving jobs, slashing immigration.
Yeah, they want to pull out of the European Union. They want to get the Muslims out. They want to get everybody out. France, you know, for the French kind of thing. And a little bit more hardcore even than what we get from Steve Bannon. And this, if you want to believe that he's some alt-right mastermind, you know. Le Pen and her party historically have been seen as extreme right-wing.
Do you think a higher level of extremism is almost necessary when we're dealing with countries like France compared to here in the United States? Because talking about terrorism and immigration, obviously Europe is hitting it much more harder than us here in the United States. It is much more of a threat on the doorstep.
The French have not been the ones to take a stand against much of anything since Napoleon got kicked out of Waterloo.
Of course. I mean, even look at a city, the capital of Paris. You basically have a city that is broken up into different segments of different nationalities. It's not a very integrated city.
No. They're basically, you know,
like, you stay over there, we'll stay over here.
The French attitude is, let's all cooperate, let's all get along. We don't want to let everybody be who they want to be. We don't want to cause any problems. And it's, as I've said before, there are a lot of similarities between what's happening in the world now and what happened before World War II, where you have one extremely strong, charismatic leader, which in this case would be Vladimir Putin, giving rise to a need for other strong and charismatic leaders in other parts of the world. Theresa May hasn't been tested yet, so we don't know what she's going to be. I can say, since she took office, right now, she's no Winston Churchill, by any stretch of the imagination. Who am I thinking of? She's no Margaret Thatcher, mm-hmm. so far. Maybe she turns into that, but she seems to be a little bit too much of a policy wonk and a little bit too much of a you know, I don't want to say shadows, but too much of a behind-the-scenes kind of operative rather than a forceful world leader. Now you're up against Trump and Putin, and I'll tell you something, Angela Merkel, I'll put her on that list. Mm-hmm. She's tough. So
I feel like it's so hard, though, to compare.
So France is basically putting itself
with years past.
France is basically putting itself in a situation where it's saying, we don't want to be out in front on any of this. Mm-hmm. We will pick and choose our allies, and we'll go along with whoever looks good in the moment. And a vote for Le Pen is basically saying, no, we're stepping up and we're going our own way. So I think the French people as a whole are more comfortable with somebody like Macron, who's basically going to sit there and say, hey, you know, EU's okay, and, you know, we love Greece, and we love America, and we love England, and we love everybody. Let's.
But I think that is where Le Pen is going to be.
Champagne and cheese for everyone.
More in favor, because you're seeing this, and especially here we saw it in the United States, nationalism that propelled Trump into the White House.
It hasn't happened in France, though. That's the thing. It has not happened.
But you've also been seeing it in many other European countries.
Correct.
Look at the situation that happened in Britain with Brexit.
Belgium's and putting up walls.
Same thing. Merkel isn't there yet, but
if it wasn't for Germany,
they're realizing that there are many, many issues that are happening with.
If it wasn't for Germany, France would be this bottleneck that all of the immigrants from Africa get stuck mm-hmm. in. And the fact that they can siphon them off into Germany.
Of course. I mean, Germany really took the forefront on that.
You look at Calais, and you can't get into Belgium anymore. Mm-hmm. You can't get into Austria. Like, all these countries are closing their borders. And they're like, nope, no more of this. We're not letting anybody in. And the French are sitting there, and they're like, no, come on. It's going to be good. It's all right. My prediction right now is that Le Pen and Macron are going to win the top two spots in the preliminary election. If there is any sort of a major attack on France between the preliminary election and the runoff election, then it becomes Le Pen's to lose. And it would not surprise me at all to find out that members of ISIS and members of Al-Qaeda get that and understand that and are waiting and are planning something. So it's going to be a busy time for the French security forces. I might think twice about booking a spring trip to Paris right now. Not that you should let fear run your life, but given the political climate over there and the opportunity that it presents for certain bad actors to further disrupt the stability of the European Union, mm-hmm. I might rethink my travel plans.
It's also interesting to talk about almost a mirror image of the U.S. elections. Today or yesterday was announced a group of 37 French and international media outlets supported by Google. They launched CrossCheck. It's a joint checking platform aimed at detecting fake news. So also news outlets over there are attempting to, I don't know, I don't get French news. I don't often read it. So I don't know how bad it is compared to here, like CNN and the Clinton News Network and everything that we went through with this election. But Well, in sports news, we learned how hungry some athletes are to play in the United States. Chicago White Sox first baseman Jose Abreu told Miami federal jury Wednesday that he ate a chunk of a fake passport while flying to the United States to cover up his illegal travel as a part of a Cuban baseball smuggling operation. Abreu testified he ordered a beer on the Air France flight from Haiti to Miami and solely consumed the page containing the false name and his photo. Abreu said he traveled illegally because he would miss the October 2013 deadline and lose the $68 million contract he later signed with Chicago. Quote, if it had not been there on that particular day, the deadline, the contract I would had would not be executed and would no longer be valid. We had to be in Chicago to sign the contract, Abreu told jurors. The testimony came in a trial of Florida-based sports agent Bartolo Hernandez and baseball trainer Julio Estrada, who are accused of alien smuggling and conspiracy. They illegally operated a ring that took the Cuban player from the communist-governed island to third countries where they could sign lucrative Major League Baseball contracts once they established residency.
And, of course, the catch in the whole thing is that you had to keep this agent and you had to keep this doctor so that you could kick money back to them for getting you into the United States.
Mm-hmm. Take a little risk on their half and they reap the benefits of it.
Yeah.
This isn't, just to kind of spread some light, this isn't something new. This has been going on for a long time. It's very hush-hush until somebody actually gets caught. It's really eye-opening and insightful when you hear, you know, a very big name player. This is the way that they did it to get to this country and get these contracts. But do we now have to look at Major League Baseball and say, you have to become, or there needs to be a path of citizenship, or have more hand in how these players are getting from the country?
Are you going to tell
but
me
essentially,
that?
But the reality, Derek, is Major League Baseball doesn't care because all they care about are hits, strikeouts, and it doesn't matter where you're coming from.
Don't tell me that Major League Baseball didn't know this guy was in the country illegally.
Of course.
Don't tell me they don't know. Like, because
no, that's being naive.
Because every baseball team has scouts that spend all day typing up information about these potential players. They know his immigration status. So why isn't Major League Baseball,
whether they're in Haiti, Dominican Republic, Cuba, and so on and so on, in these countries that some of the best athletes come from in baseball.
So why isn't Major League Baseball, which has a monopoly granted to it by the Congress of the United States of America, having its feet held to the fire? Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting question.
Somewhere there's an American who isn't playing baseball because of Abreu. No, I'm kidding about that. I'm kidding about that.
But like, again, all it comes down to is money. And
we want the best.
And essentially, Major League Baseball is aiding and abetting this process.
They are. They are. And they should be held to account for this. They should be fined for this. Mm-hmm. The people involved
Derek,
in this.
This is America's pastime. We're talking about baseball. It's American.
And this is one
like
of the
apple
most
pie and, you
know. This is one of the most insidious types of human smuggling that goes on. Because this is a type of human smuggling that takes gifted young people and basically rips them out of their own countries and drops them in the United States and makes them permanently financially obligated to some smuggler. Like the guys who are just leading people across the border down on the Rio Grande are amateurs compared to this agent and this doctor. These guys were like, no, we don't want to do the high risk stuff. We're going to steal little. And I said this last week, always steal little. We're going to steal little. We're going to find a few hugely valuable people and bring them in here. Mm-hmm. If Major League Baseball did not provide the job opportunities, then there would be no opportunity for these guys to smuggle people in here. And this is a case where, you know, we tried this during the Obama administration where they went after the employers. And the reason that going after the employers failed was because, number one, for every employer that you shut down, there's some other morally bankrupt clown who will hire illegals.
That's going to jump on the opportunity.
Under the table. And number two, if you take all the jobs away, that doesn't make the illegals go home. Mm-hmm. They're just sitting around with nothing to do. And that's a worse situation than one where they actually have somewhere to go and someplace to be all day long.
And again, this isn't a conversation about essentially illegal immigrants coming in. It's putting a focus on exactly what I just said, that Major League Baseball is aiding and abetting the process of bringing in athletes illegally.
This is where you need a law or a rule on the books that says every illegal alien that we find, you are going to be fined $10 million, Major League Baseball. $10 million for every illegal alien that is playing on one of your teams. Mm-hmm. That'll stop it real quick.
But again, there is a difference, I think, between if you have, for an example, if you had an employer that is bringing in or smuggling people to work for their company to, you know, only pay them $5 an hour compared to a star athlete that they are bringing into the country.
But see, this,
if there is some sort of process to make you a citizen or even like an extenuated visa while the time that you're playing.
That's the thing. This kid, Abreu, could have got into this country legally. You're going to tell me Bud Selig can't get a congressman on the phone and get a visa for this kid?
That's a joke.
Of course he can. Mm-hmm. Of course he can.
I think he has enough pull in Washington to make that happen.
But it's easier for them not to have to do that. You don't want to blow all your favors on bringing Cubans into the country.
No, because all the senators love their, you know, club seats at Washington National Park.
See, well, Washington's got a team now, but years ago they didn't.
Oh God!
This is
they had to go to Camden Yards.
This is part of the way that you make the whole thing work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, yeah, we're not making you go to Baltimore anymore. You don't have to watch the Orioles. We got you a National League team. Mm-hmm. No designated hitter. Everything is great. Old time baseball right here in Washington D.C. By the way, can I get 10 visas for kids from Cuba? Yeah, here you go. Mm-hmm. So there's no. These guys are predators, and Abreu probably could have gotten into this country legally, mm-hmm. except he hooks up with these guys, and these guys are like, no, 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 you have to go now. You have to get, forget, you don't
and
have
to
time to go
this
through
isn't
channels.
Something that just happens, you know, once in a while. We're
you have to go now.
Illegal rings.
And the reason that they're forcing this kid over here is so that they can prey on his salary. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much of his pay was going back to these clowns. I think it was
I'm sure it's a good chunk.
That hasn't come out yet, but I'm sure it's a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's a lot.
It's crazy to understand the process of how this happens.
But this is where you have to fine the employer for willfully ignoring the fact. And when you're talking about a handful of supremely gifted athletes who you could hand a visa to tomorrow, mm-hmm. and no one in America is going to complain. All of the best athletes in the world want to play in the United States because this is where the money is.
But these are
except for
these
soccer,
are how these people make their
Europe.
Money. They prey
exactly.
on these victims and convince them this is the only path that you're going to get here. And you're going to be stuck in Cuba, in your communist-ridden country.
But these criminals...
But here, we will bring you to salvation.
These criminals Chicago. Don't exist if Major League Baseball...
Allows it.
...looks at a player and says, where's the visa? Mm-hmm. And they can't come up with one. Suddenly that scam's done. Very easy problem to solve.
You talk about Major League Baseball cracking down on steroid use and these big companies like Biogen. Why are you not cracking down on these?
Could someone in Congress please pick up a pen?
Well, in entertainment news, we learned this year's Oscar had a plot twist of their own. PricewaterhouseCoopers has taken full responsibility for the mistakes and, quote, breaches of established protocols that led to La La Land mistakenly being named Best Picture at the Oscars on Sunday night in one of the most infamous gaffes in show's history. In a statement released Monday evening, the show confirmed that PricewaterhouseCoopers managing partner Brian Cullinan, quote, mistakenly handed the backup envelope for actress in a leading role instead of the envelope for Best Picture to presenters Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway. Once the error occurred, protocols for correcting it were not followed through quickly enough by Mr. Cullinan or his partner, the statement said, referring to PricewaterhouseCoopers' Martha Ruiz. Moonlight was eventually crowned Best Picture winner. Ruiz and Cullinan were charged with managing the envelopes containing the names of Oscar winners. At the ceremony, Ruiz and Cullinan alternated handing envelopes to presenters from the opposite sides of the stage. The Academy also broke its silence on Monday evening. In a statement, it apologized, quote, for the entire staff and crew of La La Land in Moonlight, whose experience was profoundly altered by the error.
That's a fair statement.
Yes.
Did we get to the reason why he had the wrong... First of all, the reason the two of them were there, they're on either side of the stage.
Now, I do have to say...
They both have a complete set of envelopes. And the reason they do that is so that no matter which way the presenter comes in, there is someone there to hand them the envelope. Mm-hmm. And there's people running around, and people get misplaced, and sometimes you run into the stage... That's a good policy that you're not making somebody run all the way around the back and holding things up to get an envelope.
I have to make an admission, though. I did leave your party early and fell asleep immediately.
You screwed up so badly the other night that I can't even... It was
returning home. I woke up to countless of text messages and just notifications of horror of how this could, and honestly, what my first reaction was, this was staged.
It was an electric moment in the Dolby Theater, to say the least.
This is marketing genius.
No, it wasn't.
And you think?
No, this was a total and complete screw up. This was a massive screw up. Keep in mind.
But think about.
Keep in mind.
How many people tweeted Steve Harvey, Miss Universe, and regardless, nobody tuned in this year. The ratings were even lower for Miss Universe.
This is happening on a Disney-owned channel with Disney-approved producers. Disney does not make mistakes. Disney does not allow things to go off the rails like this. This was a colossal screw-up. And the reason it happened is because Mr. Cullinan was too busy posting backstage pictures of Emma Stone to realize which envelope he was supposed to give to Warren Beatty.
Which has now been deleted from his Twitter.
So here's somebody else tweeting on the job and screwing everything up. Can we just get rid of Twitter, please? Although, in defense of Twitter, that was one of the best live television moments I've ever seen in my life.
I was going to say, what was your reaction when you were watching it? Just like...
It well, the first realization that something is wrong, because there's like 30 people from La La
Scrambling.
Land on the stage, like all milling around, and suddenly there's like people in headsets, like walking around and taking Oscars away from people. And it's like, what is going on here? And then I think it was Jordan Levinson. Finished up his speech and said, oh, by the way, we lost. And then he's like, Moonlight, you won.
Yeah.
Come on up
here.
Well,
one of the producers was a little not as happy. He's like, yeah, Moonlight won. Where the other producer, I forget his name, he came on and said, no, let me explain to you what actually happened. Look at this envelope. And he grabs the envelope, the correct envelope that is now in the hands of Warren Beatty. It was interesting to watch, though, how it took place, and Warren Beatty's just like looking down, looks at Faye Dunaway, and my first initial reaction after thinking this was staged, wouldn't you say this is the wrong card?
Warren Beatty knows it's the wrong card. Warren Beatty knows something is wrong, and Warren Beatty does not know what you do because there's no precedent for this. Mm-hmm. Warren Beatty does not know what you do when you're standing in front of a quarter... 200 million people with the wrong information. It's like, do you look off stage and say, no? are you standing there hoping somebody's going to come out? Meanwhile, Faye Dunaway has no clue at all what she's doing, no clue at all what's going on. And she's just like, oh, give me the card already.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, La La Land. She's the one that got it wrong. Warren Beatty is trying to stop this situation. Mm-hmm. Nobody's throwing him. Somebody should have
his brain like running and going.
Between the time that he went out on stage and the time that Faye Dunaway read that, they knew backstage that he had the wrong card. Somebody should have gone out and handed him the new card. And that's all you had to do. Nope. Everybody's frozen like a deer in the headlights, and Faye Dunaway is the only one that's taken any kind of action at all. Mm-hmm. So we've learned that Faye Dunaway is someone who will leap into the fray and do something. Unfortunately, it ruins the Oscars when she does that.
Yeah. Hmm.
What? And
it was crazy.
She had to have seen Emma Stone was written on the card.
Sometimes you just focus. I don't know. I honestly do not have an explanation for you.
It took one person to make a complete mess out of this thing. And we never got to see the resolution of the Jimmy Kimmel, Matt Damon sketches that were going on all night because Jimmy had to leap up from the audience and run back on stage and try and contain this fire.
Yeah.
Not one of Oscar's prouder moments.
One of the best moments.
One of the best things I've ever seen on TV.
Steve Harvey's Twitter say, Warren Beatty, give me a call.
Yeah.
I know how to deal with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Miss Universe, I believe, tweeted the same.
They should have Steve Harvey host next year. You know, and then we can just wait for the inevitable
come
moment
all together
when it happens. Mm-hmm. In technology news, big chunks of the internet went down or became very slow yesterday due to problems at Amazon's East Coast server farm. Storage servers for Amazon Web Services, the largest provider of cloud computing in the United States, began experiencing problems at around 12:30 p.m. yesterday, and Amazon engineers had things running again in a little more than 4 hours. Sites including Wix, Hulu, and the Associated Press were impacted by the outage, as were Nest Home Control devices, which could not connect to other devices. The incident raises questions about cloud reliability and the heavy concentration of companies relying on a single Amazon server site.
Yeah, this is what happens when you have one company owning too much of the internet.
Yeah, well, it's not like Amazon set out to do that. They just have the product that everybody gravitated to and that everybody uses. Mm-hmm. The problem with the internet is that if the computer goes down, it doesn't work. As anyone who tried to get something on Hulu last night found out, because Hulu was not working yesterday. Or as anybody, you know, I had a website go out on me yesterday. Mm-hmm. Everything was slow yesterday because everything's hosted on the one computer. Who does that? Where is the redundancy? Where is the failover option?
So how do they propose to fix this or eliminate this from happening again?
Amazon has a lot of splaining to do is really what it comes down to. And Amazon has got to figure out, apparently this is like one of their oldest storage server farms that went down. Well, maybe you ought to upgrade that thing, Jeff Bezos. Instead of working out your drone army, let's get the servers working so the internet doesn't go down.
Well, think about how many things in our day-to-day life that rely on computer systems. And I'm not just talking about your own personal, whether you're on your laptop or your phone, also at work, but look at how many times you go into now a grocery store or a convenience store and they're using these systems that are all connected, whether it's Amazon backed or Google. If they go down, you're not buying anything.
People couldn't get their thermostats to work yesterday. That's how bad this is, okay? Imagine a situation.
Okay, people are dumb and they're making their houses smart houses and hooking everything up to their phone.
And this is the problem, because everybody thinks this stuff is just going to be on all the time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. It's never worked that way.
But that's a reality and understanding if you're relying so deeply on the internet that it can go down and can you survive?
I remember when
some people can't even go a day without going on social media.
I remember when 95% uptime was a big deal because I've been around longer than the internet. Today, we just take it for granted that the internet is there and it's on all the time. No, it's not. Things happen to servers. Machines break. And unless you have very robust redundancy and very robust failover procedures in place, you get something like what happened yesterday.
You also have to make it clear, though, that there is no central authority in charge of the networks.
Correct.
So it's not like government is saying, oh, you need to put these protocols to make this not work.
I would imagine that it would be worse if we had a government agency in charge of this, and it would be less reliable. I mean, you take a look at Social Security.
And look how far we had to go to get some sort of net neutrality.
Take a look at America's VA system and then ask yourself if you want those people running the internet. It's WMFO Medford. No. I have to say that. The FCC gets happy when I say that. And we want to support our FCC overlords.
No one. There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
Spring is over, kids. We're going back into winter for a bit. There is a high wind warning in effect for our area. That will be continued until 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Can you believe that? 7 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow night, a high wind warning. Gusts of up to 50 or 60 miles an hour are possible throughout the region, but mostly in the western part of the state. Just don't think because you're on the eastern side of Massachusetts, you're going to skip this. There's going to be sustained winds of 20 to 30 miles an hour for the next 24 or so hours with some severe gusts. We all know what that means. Down tree limbs, down power lines. Be careful when you're out there, especially if you're out there tonight, because that's a potentially dangerous situation. Lows in the city of Boston tonight, only about 60 degrees, upper 40s if you're in the suburbs. But that's also going to be the high for tomorrow, because as we go through the day tomorrow, the temperature is going to drop hour by hour, hitting a low tomorrow night of 25 degrees. Friday, mostly sunny skies. Highs only in the mid-30s, lows in the teens Friday night, lows in the teens on Saturday night with daytime highs in the low 20s, and then on Sunday, we warm up a little bit, highs in the mid-30s, lows in the mid-20s.
I told you those numbers were banned from
winter,
the show.
Winter is back.
It's like the travel ban.
Yeah.
No teens.
So this is what we're going to get. We're going to get a lot of wind.
Wasn't it 70 degrees last week?
Yes, it was. We're going to get a lot of wind for the next 24 hours, and then temperatures are going down into the teens, and then we're going to get